Hi everyone, welcome to Type Talks. Today we're here with Dario Nardi, and he conducts neuroscience in the field of typology and in other areas too. And so recently we were at a personality hacker event, and Dario Nardi was offering brain scan imaging sessions. And so I got my brain scanned by Dario Nardi, and that is what we will be looking at today. And he will be analyzing the results with this audience and myself included. And so check out Dario Nardi. I'll link Radiance House, the place with his resources, down below, and we will get started.
Excellent.
Okay. So this is a website that contains the report with the data, and we're going to scroll through it today. With this brain scan, I did 10 daily activities for Dario, and I was wondering if you could give an overview to people who didn't get to see what we did, what the process entails for people who are curious.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's in the early days, it was a lot more open-ended with a lot more tasks, like 20 or even 30 tasks. But now there's a pretty standardized protocol of 10, and people come in, like you came in, you put on this nylon cap that has these passive voltage sensors in it that pick up voltage, the electrical difference on the surface of the neocortex. So for people who wonder, like, how does it pass through the skull? It does, just like the heart has an EM field that goes outside of the body, extending 3, 4, 5 feet. It's the same for the brain. I mean, not that far, but enough so that sensors pick it up and magnify it. And the device cleans up a little bit of other things like eye blinks and stuff like that, that create artifacts in the data. And so that technical part has been worked out for decades. I mean, the basic concepts are almost 100 years old, and the technology we're using, I mean, it's up to date, like the box and everything, the electronics, but it's pretty much how they were doing brain imaging even in the 1970s, which is amazing. It still has a lot of relevance today. And then, you know, you went through those tasks, which were, I mean, we'll talk about it when we get to that page, but basically like meditation, doing math problems, like having a list of values, and you sort those values and make some like ranking decisions around them to stimulate decision making. And there's it's like interpreting an image, listening to music, working with your smartphone, you know, just to stimulate what people would do in everyday life, giving a little bit of a speech. Interpreting an image, doing some like play with words. It's sort of like extroverted intuiting activity there. Some like footwork to get that part of the brain. So the equipment that we used is not the most advanced. I mean, it's pretty good, and what a lot of my database is and what is typically used in hospitals today. It's like medical grade equipment. But there are, just in the past couple of years, and I've started using like wireless equipment too, which allows more natural approach. Nonetheless, I still feel it's like people forget they have a bunch of weird gel in their hair and they're wearing this cap. And after, you know, 10 minutes, folks usually sort of get into it, and we do like 30, 35 minutes. I think yours was a little bit longer. I think the average is around 35, and sometimes people do 40. I don't try and pressure people too much to like finish exactly because I want to get some natural responses. And then there's some things that are visible on the computer screen, but it's not, and it's in real time, but it's not very helpful looking at it. Like, it can't draw a lot of conclusions just looking. But that's what the computer is for. And now we have this great website where we can just upload this very standardized data file. It's like the world standard. And it does analysis and creates a report. And there's actually a lot more that we could squeeze out of the data, like a lot, in order, like the report could easily be twice as long or even three times as long. But I don't think there's a reason, like we also want it to be practical for people. So that's what we did. And it takes maybe door to door. It's like an hour or something.
Very cool. Very cool. And so from this report, you can usually tell someone's subtype from their brain scan. And I actually came out as a creative subtype with harmonizing secondary. And that was wild. Yeah, so this neuroscience research is a testament to not lean in so heavily to stereotypes, because a lot of nurture can impact how someone turns out, such as their career. And you mentioned how a lot of the personality hacker crew are misfits from the brain scans that you did. And so I'm guessing that there are more creative and harmonizing folk in the personality hacker community than you would see in the average day-to-day brain set. But I'm curious, what makes the personality hacker data set different than the normal data set you would find?
I do find that within particular groups of people, so like my business partner Adrien, like he's looked at a lot of people in France and in Singapore, some of whom come from like a human resources background, but a lot of them are doing something related to engineering regardless of their type, and so they tend to show more, we want to call like left brain kind of brains, which isn't literally left brain, but is more like usually normalizing style or some variant of normalizing, even if they're ENFP, they're normalizing ENFPs. And so going to the different contexts, when I worked with the UCLA students, there were a lot. Well, one is that they were generally a young age group, you know, like 17 to 23, where the results, I think, matched like very closely with what you would expect for type. But there was still like a lot of normalizing among them, because it's like they're like the top one half of 1% of high school students in California going to a top university in a cognitive science or anthropology bachelor's of science program. So they're definitely like more left brain. And then I find with the personality hacker group, both when there was a meeting, like a year and a half ago, something like that, it was in Orlando and there was like three volunteers on stage, and that like being on stage is a little bit like abnormal situation and whatever, but some folks volunteered who are mostly like staff, like Melissa, don't remember who the others two are. I can see their faces. And they also came out like primarily creative and harmonizing. I believe that there's the way that, especially the personality hacker training, so it's not necessarily just folks who are listening to their podcasts, but it's the folks who actually do the training. It's not one of those like, oh, just sort people by ENN, TNF, JNP, SNN. It really is focusing on type dynamics. And type dynamics is not a simple model. And the idea is you're getting up there and you're doing it live with the person. I mean, you might have like a little cheat sheet or something to like think of some good questions to ask, but basically you get loaded with training. And then when you meet with people to profile them or to do coaching, like in their advanced track, like you got to put all of your knowledge to work. And although Joel, who's the ENFP and is more like dominant, a little bit creative style, Antonia is the one that is like a lot of harmonizing. And as an ENTP, there's a lot of multivariable thinking that's going on. And I think that gets then communicated to the students, and that's sort of what's expected. So this, I mean, you're working one-on-one with people. You're supposed to be doing this in like a specialized way, looking for like subtlety. Somebody said that maybe a better word than sophisticated is subtle. And you're sort of winging it as you go from like some internal mental model. So like everybody's modeling how to be an ENTP, whether that's their type or not, but like a people-oriented ENTP. And people-oriented in the sense of like, yeah, this is like your job. So I think that's what attracts the students. Not like every person is that way, but there's definitely like a really strong bias in that direction. I think probably out of the 18 plus 3, so like 21 people, mostly this time around, but three from the time before, at least 15 of them were creative or harmonizing or a mix of those, which is really unusual. Like that's so, and it's a reminder, especially to be honest, for anybody who works in academia and is gathering data from the students who are there, or maybe even from faculty who are there, like it's very easy to have a biased data set because of the context that we're in. So long story short, I would say it's a combination of the task that people are trying to learn and like absorb and practice. Because it's not just like mental learning. It's not lecture kind of stuff. I mean, there's some lecture, but almost all of it is embodied and interactive and meant to be used. And that the person really does need to be harmonizing. Although I know, as like being more the creative style myself, I'm like, yeah, if I'm like in the flow of things, I can wing it pretty well.
Yeah, it's nice to know that my social circle, like Personality Hacker, like one of my social circles is our misfits and outliers. It makes me feel like I have a place in the world. So this is a shout out to you, Joel and Antonia. We're not even being paid. We're just like letting people know about how excellent your profile or training is. So you're welcome. Yeah. It's interesting how even the curriculum they teach is molding the subtype of possibly their students too. And I have a feeling that I'll have some extroverted thinkers in the crowd that want to know the percentages of what you hypothesize that the general population has in terms of subtype. Like what is the subtype distribution for the TE users who want to know? If you were to guess.
Yeah, no, I mean, so it's I do have a spreadsheet somewhere, and I presented to the British Type Association in like February of 2022. So off the top of my head, I don't remember. So to give it a sense, like the starburst pattern that I mentioned, the creative subtype, like pretty much most ENFPs have that. So they're not extroverted thinking, is a different type, extroverted intuiting, but either it's strong or usually it's like intermediate strength. And then occasionally like the person is still normalizing or dominant ENFP and they have the starburst, it's just weak or it's sort of hidden. Like it's, you know, we'd have to like dig down into their brain imaging data and be like, oh, there it is down there. Like it's only occurring once every 5 minutes instead of once every minute or a few seconds or whatever it is. I would say off the top of my head, again, I'd have to like dig up this data. The folks with extroverted thinking are probably more likely to be dominant or normalizing or like have that present in their pattern. And I've looked also at like cutting up people by age bracket, mm-hmm. especially for the types that have like, they're like INTJs. It was like 45 INTJs. I think there's almost 30 ISTJs. And you still see ones who are creative and harmonizing among those, usually not the young ones, but it comes up. I just want to say like two things. One is, you know, we have all of, and this was an activity that we did at Personality Hacker on that Sunday, that last day, where it's like everybody has sensing, intuiting, thinking, and feeling. Just think of the level of four functions and then ask yourself, like, how do you do that? How do you do sensing? How do you do intuiting? And I think that allows people to like get out of their box a little bit or like get out of this like rigid stack and ask, like, how are these showing up for you? And how are you using these different functions that you have available, whether it's like more conscious or less conscious, whether it's more competent or less competent. Like, you know, many INTJs, they need like very like quiet, controlled, structured environment in order for their introverted intuiting to work well. And I feel like for teaching so many years and also taking the time to like actually model after people with extroverted intuiting, that I like have to extrovert my introverted function. And that comes a little bit of me like looking away for a moment, or I mean, a lot of it is also just loading it as an NT. It's like, yeah, I can do that really well, like be spontaneous with stuff I really know well. And yeah, sometimes, yeah, I really do need all of that quiet and organized and silent environments to flow. But a lot of times it can also be done spontaneously. So I think it's like people tend to associate the functions with particular behaviors, but type is not a framework or theory of behavior. It's one about consciousness and mental functioning. And so that can come out in different ways. It just so happens that there are particular behaviors that tend to serve those pretty well, but not necessarily. Some INTJs are pretty OCD. I'm not very OCD. I made a conscious choice in my mid-teens. I'm like, I'm not even going to wear a watch anymore because it was making me neurotic to wear a watch. I'm like, I'm already so aware of time all the time that like, oh, now I have this watch and I'm like super hyper aware. I'm like, I'm getting rid of this. Made no difference because I always knew like what time it was. So it was fine. The other thing is people then wonder, well, if this brain wiring is revealing subtype, then what about type? Like, how do I know? Well, there's a lot more data than the brain wiring. It's just the brain wiring tends to be something that's very it has high reliability statistically. And we can look at things like favorite brain regions or what gets a person into flow, which are totally different questions. And then those correlate more with the functions. And I'm still one of those. Yeah, I fall into those categories of like what takes me into flow and what are some of my most active regions. So there's like a lot to look at and a lot of different ways that people can develop and express themselves, especially if they've been around. I mean, like I've been around 53 years. If somebody's half my age listening to this, I'm like, you know, there's a lot of room for development between 25 and 50 if we choose to take up that journey.
Cool. Well, thank you for sharing that. Very in-depth. Type is consciousness. It's not your behavior. So yeah, it's the why behind why you do something. It's not the actual thing you do itself. Because many different types can do the same thing for wildly different reasons that pertain to their cognitive wiring. So, mm-hmm. All right, cool. We shall get started with reviewing my reports. So as I was doing the 10 activities with Dario, you made this comment as I was playing Uno cards that, mm-hmm. Oh, you are in a Zen state, typically like always, you're in a Zen state even when you're playing the Uno cards for one of the activities that you had. And I was like, oh, interesting. So here is the engagement record, which shows how active your brain is in microvolts. So I'm going to read this to people who are listening to the audio version of this. And so when you do the 10 activities, you have an engagement record. And so the chart shows how active your brain was in microvolts. Longer bars indicate more activity when interested, challenged, and energized. Shorter bars indicate boredom, tiredness, or relaxation. The chart bars do not indicate skill, just voltage. Voltage vary with time and day, and so and so. The bars are pretty low, and I just want to give people context. I went for 2 weeks of retreats. So before the Personality Hacker event, I was at a week-long intensive 2 with Beatrice Chestnut and her Enneagram retreat. And so I was really dead tired.
And you know, you still show a wide range of responsiveness. Like you have bars that go up quite high. Maybe the average, yeah, is lower than the average person. But it looks completely normal to me. And times that we'd expect it to be low, like when doing meditation or maybe listening to music, those two are usually low for people. Folks with sensing perceiving preference, when we're using like a wireless headset and they stand up and they like do a ball toss activity, most people find ball toss like really like activates the brain activity. Even when we try and like screen out the fact that they're moving and so on. But for SP types, it tends to be very low. And so that I just mentioned that is like ways that we can like reduce stress. So meditation, listening to music, you see like your meditation, listening to music are both very low for you, which is good. That means like you've got your brain to quiet during that time. Some people can't quiet their brain. And then there's, I find looking at yours, that there are moments in what you do, like whether it's using those, like, you know, the creative word activity, when you're playing Uno, there's not a lot of high activity, but there's moments where there's like a burst or a spike. And that's so you were still engaged, even if it was maybe a little bit on the lower side. But there are folks who are definitely much lower and their eyes are still open and they're still talking and doing stuff. Yeah. So sometimes it is, I like to say it's not even that they're tired or that they're bored. Their brain is just very efficient. And that's, and then some people, like, the voltage tends to be very high overall, and they're just like very stimulated. And yeah, if a person has like had a lot of, like, they rested well and then they had coffee and all of those things will change the amount of activity. They do not affect the brain wiring that much. So I wouldn't worry about that. Like, your results should not be skewed by being tired, like in the later part of the report. It's not even skewed that much here. Like, it looks pretty normal to me.
Very cool. Yeah. So that's interesting. So with SP types, with high extroverted sensing, when they do the ball toss, they are actually, their brain is more efficient with it. It's, so they actually have less voltage than the normal person who's
doing it. Yeah. And they're more relaxed. I think you can even see it on their face that they're more relaxed with it. I mean, not that every SP type is like good with physical activities, but most of them are pretty comfortable with it.
That is so cool. Yeah. And you said that with extroverted intuition users, they tend to have really high brain activity, I believe.
In general, yes. I'm curious, could you scroll up a little bit? I'm going to look at like the value sort activity. Yeah, and then the math problem. Yeah, I see. Okay. So sometimes it's like, you know, the amount of engagement, it could be the amount of effort that the person is putting in. So a lot of people don't like math, but they still make an effort at it in those like 3 minutes or so. And you put in a bunch of, you know, a bit of effort there, as a lot of people do. And then some people get very stimulated by the value sort and the image interpretation. And other people don't. And I think a lot of that is in terms of interest as mm-hmm. well. Yeah, so we could dig into this a lot, like this kind of data, but I just keep it simple here, like amount of activity during each, you know, brain activity during each task, like keep it sort of simple.
Got it. Very cool. Very cool. You mentioned the Zen brain pattern. How does that appear in people that you brain scan, like introverted intuition dominance that tend to have that?
Well, so yeah, there's a whole story behind that. So when I was doing the research in the first 5 years, I had a different brain imaging, like EEG machine than I do now. And that machine came with a much more interesting live interface. And that allowed me to see things like it had a variety of like bars in terms of lengths and colors. And it didn't just show the raw data. So that allowed me to see pretty clearly when people were getting to a state of flow or the Christmas tree pattern or whatever it is. I really lucked out in that regard, that even though that device was older, like it was basically a lot in use from like the mid 90s to the mid 2000s until the father son team retired. And then I got a new device. And fortunately, the new company like took up the old customers, people like me, and they gave us like, here's like a filter you can use to normalize your results. So if you're in the middle of research, like you can make sure it's consistent. And their new hardware and software is more sophisticated, but the display is not very good. Like it does what sadly, a lot of brain imaging equipment today actually gives you less information than they used to 20 years ago, which is sort of irritating. I guess they expect people will build their own displays from using an API or something. So it's harder for me to see just looking at the raw data. But what the flow would look like is that all of the regions, or most of them, or really say the sensors, and the sensors are, you know, one sensor at each region, are showing like the same frequency and the same amplitude. It's sort of like if you turned on the radio, no matter which station you turned to, it was all electronic dance music, or it was all easy listening, or whatever it is. There's just like this consistent pattern that runs all the way across. So one of the items on our to-do list that Adrienne and I have is to enhance these the online reports, because right now it was like we upload the data and then boom, it creates the report. But it also means like we can't squeeze out anything more until we program it in to look specifically for when people get into a state of flow and note that. And the nice thing is your report will be updated. Like as soon as we add the new feature, then your report, every time you look at it, will reflect the new features. And there, I don't know how we'll do it visually, but it's going to be on that chart that you were showing that will just show like little sections like, oh, you were in flow during this time, or you were in flow during that time. But generally speaking, it's not something that we can see that clearly from this particular thing, because we want to know like that chart doesn't show frequency. It does show the amount of activity, but it's showing it over the whole brain all at once, which is, it doesn't tell us like, was every region like the same, or was like that just an average, or that was like the one highest region, which is what it actually is showing. So I'm afraid you'll have to hold on to your hat a little bit longer for this display to the report to show that. And the flow could be very short. It could be like, well, if I say 3 to 5 seconds, that sounds like very short, but still, if you count it out like 1 1,000, 2 1,000, 3 1,000, 4 1,000, and we're talking about the brain where it's gathering data, you know, we're getting data points every 1/256th of a second. Like 4 seconds is a long time, not to mention like 1 minute or 2 minutes, something like that. So, I think that's something that in terms of your reports and most of the reports we've run, like it doesn't show that right now. And that's but it will.
Got it. Well, I'm really looking forward to that, and I'll be excited when it comes out with the new additions to the report. And so we are on to the your cognitive dynamics section. I'm just going to read it for people who may not be able to see it, and for those who are listening. Maps below are bird's eye view of the neocortex. The top is your nose and forehead. The circles indicate the key brain regions. The lines between the circles indicate major neural connections. Links indicate regions that work together closely in sync. The strongest links are shown below. They are the top 32% of all possible links. You rely on them most. Note, you showed a starburst pattern. It connected 19 of the 20 brain regions and ranked in the top 1% of all neural connections. What does that mean?
So that means that you had a starburst pattern, and it didn't reach every single region. It reached like 19 out of the 20 sensors were firing in sync. But that's like still pretty close. I mean, that's maybe there's one little part of you that's like not participating, but 19 out of 20 is a lot. And in the top 1%, meaning like basically it's the fastest. You know, if somebody reads something like, oh, you know, like your grades are in the top 1% for your graduating class, like that sounds really good. So it's basically that. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is the starburst that it's talking about, connecting 19 regions. Cool. Yeah, and it'll show exactly what the regions do here as you're seeing. And I just want to give people an impression of what the report shows. And so you'll see as you click on these regions, you'll have different descriptors. Like you'll notice even diamonds here too.
Yeah, because so, you showed harmonizing second. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the percentage is how often it fires.
Yes. Yeah, between like 1% and 100%.
Yeah.
Obviously, if it's 0%, it's not going to show up.
Got it.
Yeah.
Very cool. And that the red one is the quickest link, I believe.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So here it says the circuit between O1 and T6. So the visual engineer and insightful futurist.
And is there... it's 7%, which means that pretty much your brain is working in a starburst pattern or the diamonds like most of the time. And then when we look at individual, like just one-on-one pairings, like that's way down there. Like you're a very holistic thinker.
That's very reassuring to know. And would you be able to tell if I'm like a left brain thinker or a right brain thinker off of this, or?
I mean, that's a really good question. I mean, the concept in neuroscience of the hemispheres, left and right being differentiated. Yes. I mean, that's a valid concept that the left hemisphere is more what's called analytical skills and the right hemisphere is more holistic skills. So an example would be with the visual regions, which are at the bottom of this map here, O1 and O2, that the left visual cortex is much more about focusing on detail. Like if you're driving, you're focusing your eye and you're looking at specific signs or, you know, something specific in your environment. And then the right occipital area, the right visual cortex, is much more holistic. It's like paying attention to the entire environment all at once, so that you're prepared for a surprise or you have a general sense like, oh yeah, look, it's heavy traffic. Oh, now it's suddenly light traffic. Like how do we know? Like those aren't just details, like that's a representation of the whole picture. So very rarely is a person like grossly lopsided in terms of left or right hemisphere. Like everybody uses both of their hemispheres of their brain. You certainly do. I think it's, if it's not like even, I'm not going to say 50-50, but it could be with like 48-52, something like that. You know, very close. And most people are. That said, there are mostly like 75 or 80% of the regions in the left hemisphere are things we typically associate with left brain people, like attention to word content, attention to rules, specific visual features like steps, processes, like time efficiency, that kind of stuff, like good aim. Whereas the stuff that's in the right hemisphere, most of those regions, 75-80%, are those like classic holistic like right brain kinds of things. Like what is the overall emotional tone of the group that we're in, or paying attention to voice tone, body language, that kind of thing. Because you have like such a strong starburst pattern. And then you have these diamonds, which also run left and right, back to front in different ways, that you have, you have pretty good use of both. And that's, I think that's great. Like, I wouldn't say like any brain pattern is better or worse than any other. But, you know, it's always nice to know, yeah, at least you're using most of your brain. There are occasionally people I've looked at. I remember there was one older, like not an older, but like in his 50s. And he came in and he had almost no connectivity in his right prefrontal cortex. And I was so concerned. At first, I thought, looking at the data, because it is sort of unusual to have like no connectivity or just like one little soft connection. That's in the top 32%. Maybe the sensor wasn't like calibrated properly or something. But that wasn't the case. Like when I mentioned it, I'm just like, I'm just going to trust the data and mention it. And he's like, oh, I've suffered a skiing concussion 3 times that actually I hit my right forehead, right side of my forehead 3 times. I'm like, well, that shows up in your brain, might not want to hit your head again. So that kind of thing can happen with people. But you don't have anything like that here. Like you're using all the different regions of your brain in some way.
That's relieving to know. There's also a fast challenge mode and a slow automatic mode. And the combined mode is the sum of these two modes. Mm-hmm. And so what is that for people who are new to those concepts?
Well, at a very, like for people who are listening who might know something about neuroscience or want to look it up, I'll just say that the fast mode or challenge mode is the fast brain waves. So that's like some of the alpha and the beta and gamma brain waves that are just like really high frequency. And people are going to show that when they're more awake, they're more active, they're in like reward seeking behavior, or at least maybe even like a punishment avoidant behavior, or they're doing sensory integration, like they're like learning and they're excited. And so that's what like the fast challenge mode is. And fast in this case, meaning like a high frequency. And I think the word challenge says it nicely, that that's like when we're like really like pushing ourselves, you know, on a task, we're like up and awake and working hard. That's what we're going to show. And then the slow sort of more relaxed mode, automatic mode, is delta and theta waves. And that's the stuff that when like people are relaxed, like they're doing very routine problem solving, like what's 2 + 3? Like you don't have to think about that. I mean, you're aware that you're solving the problem, but that's about it. Like it just comes automatically. Or when people are even sort of sleepy, the same, you know, if you're just sort of like drifting off or you're meditating. And, you know, people can be different in these different modes. Like somebody could have like a lot of front bias, for example, in the challenge mode, because like when they really like push their game, so to speak, that they're like truly really trying to be dominant, and then the rest of the time like they're actually more chill and relaxed. In your case, like the maps are not identical. There are some differences. Like you have more individual one-on-one connections in the challenge mode, but they're not that different from each other, to be honest, for you. So in your particular case, there is not a lot to call out that says like, you know, you're different in challenge mode than you are in this more relaxed mode. There's a few small differences, but you know, you're pretty much the same, probably whether you're daydreaming or, you know, you're chilling out eating breakfast, or you're doing a, you know, podcast or video cast. Like it's the same you using the same brain circuits for all of them. So that's whereas sometimes people can be very different.
I see.
I would say there was a funny time where I had a couple come in, and I never really quite figured out her type. She had like English as a third language, and she's an ISTJ or ISFJ, and he was an ESFP. And they like argued a lot with each other. He was using a lot of extroverted thinking on her. I'm pretty sure she was ISFJ. And she's like, what are you doing? Like, you're stressing me out. And when they were in each other's presence, because normally, especially with couples, like they absolutely must do the brain imaging sessions apart. Like they cannot have their partner in the room because that will affect their brain activity, or it has a decent chance of doing that. And so they did their sessions apart. But for the last 10 minutes of each session, I had them come together and like do some problem solving together. And then they got in an argument. And it was really interesting because in challenge mode, they looked very similar, but in the sort of the slow mode, the relaxed mode, they were very different from each other. So I think this was an example that when they try and step up and they're like, yeah, putting in the work to communicate with each other and work together, like they found a way to do that. And they had been together for a while and they did remain together for a couple more years. But actually underneath they were quite different and their relaxed self was very different.
Interesting. Yeah. So when they fight, they look similar and maybe they're combating each other in a similar fashion. Huh. The more you know, this is fascinating stuff. So it really does show how important environment is to shaping us. So right now I'm just going to open up the tabs that you have available for these brain scans to see if there's anything we'd want to tackle here, or if anyone wants to look at these. All right.
Yeah. I think probably the one that people would be interested in is like the general patterns to look for. Like things that I tend to look for, does the person have good executive function? In other words, the left and right prefrontal areas of the brain are communicating quickly and in sync with each other. Even though, if, for example, you know, you show mostly the creative and then harmonizing patterns or starbursts and diamonds, you still have strong executive function, which a person should have like age 25 and above, regardless of what else is going on in their brain. Is the person more active or reflective? In other words, more like front or back bias? That's pretty accepted within the neuroscience community. Like people have more front brain wiring, especially between the frontal and prefrontal. Like between those two regions are generally going to be more like trait extroverted. Whereas people more like a lot more back bias, the back of the brain, more visuals in nature, more analytic or holistic, like is there a little bit of a left or right bias? I mean, a fair number of people do show some bias, like visually you can sort of look at it and see like, yeah, they're like 10% more on this side. In your case, there wasn't really any difference, but does a person show a starburst pattern? And then just some questions about like sensory integration, like visual, auditory, and kinesthetic, how those regions work together. Like sometimes people could have like very strong, like the C3 sensors. So the left somatosensory region is like very active, but like the right one is not. And so the person is very good then at say like repetitive motion, like dance steps, that kind of thing. There'd be C3 region. For those of you who can see the video, like there's a little pop-up there. Yeah. And that's not just physical movement. That's also a lot of times when people are thinking or speaking, they have a sensation that goes with it that mirrors some kind of physical movement. Even when somebody goes like step by step, and for those of you who can see, like I'm moving my hand when I do that. So like the hand motions, and so the hand motions are also the frontal region too. But then the C4 in the right hemisphere is much more like everything from art and beauty appreciation, emotional expression, like drawing, painting, sculpting. And if people are wondering, by the way, like, oh, how do we know these different regions help with these different things? And that's the word I use, like help or mediate. I think help is a good word. Like, I mean, most of this is very standard accepted stuff that's in a neuroscience textbook. The way I do it in the people in EEG is we actually look up the functionality by what are called Brodmann regions, Brodmann areas, and Brodmann. And then when you look those up on like even like Wikipedia, it will just tell you a summary of all of the research like across thousands or hundreds, or maybe sometimes with some less common ones, dozens of research studies. And this is what it's about. So like we know that sensors T3 and F3 correspond to Broca's area and Wernicke's area in the brain, and therefore they're involved with speech and language-based reasoning. Like that's not me coming up with these. Like, yeah, I'm writing these cute little paragraphs in English, but that's like very standard. Like, I don't think I mean, I like to see what I've read, but it isn't like some huge revelation, like very standard stuff.
Yeah, it's fascinating to learn about all of this. This is mind-blowing. Yeah. And so we will go to the next session of this report, which is your top three brain networks. Let's look at that. A strong starburst bias, number one. You're highly creative, intuitive, and inquisitive with a tremendous capacity to connect data in novel ways. With every new input you get, every part of your brain gets involved to consider its potential meaning or use. You're talented across subjects, humanistic, artistic, technical, and physical. You are a generalist and may be visionary. You may struggle to focus and can waste time and energy trying to respond in a new or exciting way when not needed.
That would be one side of the person, and that's like the strongest pattern, but it wasn't the only pattern. And that could be true of a lot of types, or maybe even somebody would say, you know, if it's more extreme, like ADD or something like that. But I think it can also be very useful because when all those regions work together, then the person can be very creative.
Yeah, because it's a whole brain experience. The second pattern is the multi-diamond bias, which I'm assuming is the harmonizing pattern usually. And so actually, there are some stereotypical wiring patterns here. And I was wondering, which one of these are the different subtypes, would you say, if we were to go through these?
Well, yeah. So if we really wanted to, like, if we wanted like a very detailed typology of brain wiring, we could probably talk about 24. That just happens to be the number of ones that are here. Different patterns, and some of them are very front, like very, you know, specific. So like, is a front bias or is it a center front bias? They do mean something different. And if you read about them, they're going to be different. Is it going to be center back or just the back? Does the person have a single diamond or they have multi diamonds? Is it like a strong starburst, a weak starburst, a hidden starburst? Do they have a left bias or back left bias? We really can get very detailed like that. And one of them by itself could not describe a person very well. I mean, I suppose there's somebody who's like just even field and then that's it. But as we dig into the data, we'll see like, no, that's the most prominent pattern. But this is why with your report, I mean, with everybody's report, you're going to see these top three to describe how they are. So yeah, I could get more, we could get more detailed. And in the future, maybe that means that when we talk about, we'll talk about 16 types and then we'll say, oh yeah, but we can talk about these variants or subtypes and there's like 16 of those or 12 or whatever it is. I'm not there yet in terms of the amount of data to be able to justify that. Helen Fisher has gone from 4 to 8. Which says that we probably could have 8 subtypes. I think right now just even ranking them is pretty good. So yeah, specifically we can group them. I do notice that there are things that go together like, or don't. So the chance that a person has multi diamonds and halo is like, no, like does the person have like both strong starburst and even field? No. Like there are things that don't occur together. So when we just take the data and start sorting it into broad categories, if we say there's going to be 4 categories or 6 or 8, that we see that a lot of these group together. Like a person's not going to have both a strong starburst and a hidden starburst. The hidden starburst is going to be there, or a weak one, because the person also has like a front bias or a left bias or something like that. It's just a matter of like taking all of the people by a demographic, you know, by their type, by nationality, by gender, and sorting them into 2 groups, 4 groups, 8 groups. And some of them like ENFP, we took the time to sort them into 8 groups. Then you see like these pretty consistent ones. So this is like a little bit like overkill in a way, like showing all these different patterns. It's basically saying like, here's our language to describe what's going on in your brain. in terms of a report, but mm-hmm. these are not like each just like, oh, there are people who only have center front bias. Like that's not the case. Like that's just one aspect of your brain wiring.
Got it. That's really helpful. It really shows the variation in brain pattern wiring. I'm guessing in terms of subtypes, like front or center front could indicate a possible dominant subtype. The singular diamond or the multi diamond might indicate harmonizing or about to be harmonizing. And then the hidden starburst, weak starburst, strong starburst are all of the creative subtypes. Possibly or becoming creative, like if you're mm-hmm. transitioning in life to look more like that. And yeah. then possibly the even field and some other ones are normalizing. I might be missing some.
Yeah. Normalizing tends to be even field. And a lot of people with even field have a left or back bias or like center back, center front. So those are just like, they're mostly in the center, but there's a little bit towards the front or a little bit towards the back. Like they still have a square shape to them. The one that's in like the center, like in the top row there at the very center called center, like that's still like a couple of big squares there. So it's not a farm field or quilt pattern throughout the whole brain, but it's like half the brain all in the center has that quilt pattern. That those are the folks that are normalizing. They have just basically a bunch of one-on-one connections. And a lot of those, there's a lot of symmetry to it in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, those would be the normalizing folks. There are some people who don't, when we go to the level of four only, it's like what are they exactly? An example would be people have the zigzag pattern, which mm-hmm. is more towards the bottom there. Or like the random field, and they're mostly people with extroverted feeling in my experience. In fact, almost entirely, extroverted feeling is one of the first three functions, that it doesn't occur very much with other folks. All of them are a little bit more type related. When we bring them all together and ask like what's secondary or what's tertiary. But that's one that's like, yeah, what is it? The zigzag? Well, it's not diamonds, although it has stuff in common with diamonds, and it's not even field. It's like somewhere in between the two. Like there are a lot of one-on-one connections, but instead of forming a nice farm field pattern, they're just like a lot of diagonals that connect regions that don't normally connect with each other for other people, the rest of the population, which can look like intuitive leaps in thinking. It can look like weird thinking, like the very specialized, whatever it is. So I think that that's one that's, if we were to like break it out into more subtypes, then that might be like its own. Or it could be that it's simply related to the functions. It's like, I noticed like with say like dominant ENTJs versus dominant ENTPs, the dominant ENTJs are going to have that front bias, but they're also going to have a left hemisphere bias. Whereas the dominant ENTPs, you look at them and like the ones that are also with the front bias, but they have a right bias as well. So it's like ENTJs, ENTPs, who are dominant style, like they all have that like, yeah, I'm comfortable in leadership position and dealing with leaders. But the ENTJs are a little bit more left-brained. I mean, a little bit like visibly so. And the ENTPs are a little bit more right-brained, which is, I think, type-related. You know, I mean, it reflects their type.
That is interesting. Yeah, you can have your brain style and it can also reflect your type in some sort of way too, because certain types are more likely to score certain ways in different brains, different brain styles.
And the pillar, which is the very last one there, that's one that's more common with, not that people with introverted thinking necessarily have that, but among the people who have that, it's usually people with introverted thinking first, second, or maybe third. And that's just like front to back, like a lot of, like it's not very auditory. It's very visual, spatial, a lot of language-based reasoning, but not actually connected to speech production. I think we know those people, right? We've encountered them. Like, they think in terms of symbols in their head, and they're really great at visual spatial problem solving, but they're not very good communicators. They do have strong executive skill, but it's very narrowly focused around that central pillar of regions running back to front. And they tend to have a good, at least when we look in the literature, in terms of like, what does it take for a person to break out of a stuck, like being stuck in problem solving to discover like a new solution? It's people who have this like, this left and this right connectivity here, this pillar pattern. And that's, so there are things, not just extroverted feeling, like there's stuff that's definitely related to type at the same time. It's just not like 100%. Because there, I think there's different ways in the brain to implement what we do.
Yeah. It's interesting how the FE pattern, which is the random feel or the zigzag usually, is the almost opposite of someone with high introverted thinking, like a TP or a tertiary TI user who is avoiding the FE almost in the pillar pattern. It's like the opposite of the zigzag or random feel. All right. So that brings us to your orientation. I was wondering if you could go a little bit into this.
So I don't want to spend a lot of time on this one because it's a little bit. So this section of the report was originally proposed by a colleague of mine in India. And he really wanted something practical to give to people for career counseling. And so when we talk about orientation here, maybe like scroll down a little bit. So it says your favorite focus is social, but if you see the pie chart, you'll see that it has two options there, like social versus technical. That is not in any way related to thinking versus feeling. That's just summing up the skills that the person has, like brain-wise, and saying like, where are the bulk of the skills? Which would be in terms of like career counseling, that would be really useful to know. You have like more of this in terms of brain regions that are more densely connected. You have more regions related to social, emotional, and people skills, 58% versus 42% for technical tasks and things. Most people are like 45 to 55%. Yours is a little bit stronger and clearer than that. So I would say stay with what you're doing in terms of working with people, at least for now. And then again, abstract versus concrete. We might be tempted to relate that to sensing versus intuiting, but that's not what it's about. Again, the section and the way it's calculated is really focused on career counseling. And should the person be doing more concrete stuff or more abstract idea kind of stuff? And I believe your bias is, it says abstract here. So it happens to be that the people in abstract also match your type preferences in a sort of parallelism. But that isn't necessarily the case for people. There are INTPs who become psychologists, and there are ENFJs who become medical researchers. Like there's, skills are different than the personality preference.
Yeah, that is true. So these two sections are what career paths should you choose in the future? Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is good information for people who are looking to see what they should pursue. All right. And I also noticed that when you get a report with Dario Nardi, you get a few ways to view it. So there is the fast challenge mode, and some of the results will be very similar and some of them might be slightly different. When I do things quickly, I want to actually be technical, and I actually favor abstract way more in quick thinking, apparently.
It means when you're really like, upping your game and like putting a lot of attention and effort, like with beta and gamma waves, you're like stretching into your like inner NT.
That's so cool. Yeah. And I would have never known that without you. So,
I have to credit Adrienne with that. Like I didn't imagine. Well, I occasionally broke it down into modes, and then for a long time, I didn't do that with people's reports. And he's like, no, it's so easy. Like, when it's automated in a website, he's like, let's do it.
Cool. And another part of this report is you tell people their favorite executive style. So for me, it's reflective experimenter here.
Yeah. So that's more, again, it's going to look like interaction style. But what it really is like left or right prefrontal cortex, like your executive region. And then is it more like, you know, back or front of the brain kind of stuff? So that your a person's executive style often matches, like makes sense for their type, but at times it may be, you know, we've all met people who are like the introverted introvert, mm-hmm. which is different than where I would say, like, I'm an extroverted introvert. Like, I'm not anywhere like on the spectrum. Like, I'm okay with people in a crowd, like whatever, like my battery goes down very easily. But in terms of style too, like, yeah, I got extroverted thinking quite a bit, but I'm also very comfortable just being like, I think I'm also like reflective experimenter. So it's yeah, that's what the name implies. It's more left, it's more right brain, and it's also like a little bit more back bias.
Very cool. And so there are four executive styles. As you can see here, the confident expediator is fast and decisive. The principled refiner is slow and decisive. Lively energizer is fast and open-ended. And reflective experimenter is slow and open-ended. So that's pretty cool. There's many different typologies within your brain. And so that brings us to your six best developed skills. And so, insightful futurist. Notice patterns, see how events connect, link now to your life history, and foresee what will come next. Interpret a face or image within a group or context, sensing what's going on. Notice symbols and their hidden meaning. With overuse, may worry a lot or just know things but cannot say why. In the workplace, you easily notice patterns in visual data, tend to think about the future and what opportunities or challenges are coming next. Ask, what patterns do you see and what will happen in the future? Likely to notice how past and future relate and how everything works as a system. Responds well to timelines, symbols, icons, totems, and bulletin boards. Whatever allows you to represent everything at once. Prefer a workplace that helps people develop their potential. Interesting. So what do you have to say about this section of the report?
So this section is based on the brain wiring data, and in the past, you know, you actually, all of you did also receive like a separate one page attachment that showed what was most active during the actual lab session. So I think this is like an important question. People may wonder, like, how stable are these results? This section here is based on the brain wiring, and brain wiring takes like time to develop, and it is stable. It's not my research, but other people's research say that the reliability of brain wiring data is about 2 years. So this kind of results that we're giving with like, you know, the top six are going to be things that are stable more, I don't want to say long-term, but long-ish term. But we could, you know, give you a report. It was just like, yeah, for those like 40 minutes that you were in the lab, like what was most active on that day, on that hour with those tasks. And those could be similar. They probably will be like 2/3 similar, but they're also going to be somewhat different because they're biased by the situation you were in and what you were doing at the time. So I prefer to give people this kind of data that's really like, What is the major player in your brain long term, at least for a few years? And it's insightful futurist T6, which of course, for people who know you and your type, are going to be like, well, of course that makes sense for INFJ. And yeah, it does. I mean, a lot of people are not surprised by their results. And there may be things in there, you know, usually 2/3 of it is going to be stuff that are skills that clearly relate to their favorite functions, like the top of their stack. But then the other third is probably going to be stuff that reflects, you know, their non-preferred functions, like their third and fourth function. And it can also reflect to some extent the person's, and it should reflect their career. especially like imagine there's like a ESTP or a ENTP who's on the phone all the time and they can't see the person that they're talking to maybe, but they can hear them. And there's stuff writing on the line, like they're doing sales calls or, you know, like business brainstorming or whatever it is, they're going to have good listening skills. And that has nothing to do with whether they're like thinking or feeling type or something like that. Like they just have to have good listening skills. So that's going to come up. Now, how are they managing those listening skills, or like what does it serve? For the ENTP, that probably is like extroverted feeling. We could assign it that way, but you know, I don't think we need to get like all specific and pedantic about it. So I'd say it's like mostly the person's type preferences, including to some extent their opposite type, and then also their career, if there are some skills that like are really must-do skills.
Well, that is really fantastic. You're really showing the complexity and nuance of what makes people people. And so you're showing that an ESTP can have certain quirks that you would not expect of an ESTP because of this, this, this. And we spend most of our time in our careers for a lot of people. And so it really does shape a formative part of you. I'm excited to see all the subtype variations you infer even more deeply into as the future progresses and you get more data. And so this is just showing you a really amazing glimpse into Dario's work. And he does brain imaging for y'all if you are interested and you have a little bit of change to provide for his neuroscience research endeavors and all the wonderful things that he creates. So yeah. Dario Nardi is also a very skilled shaman. He is very creative, as his subtype suggests, and he was really able to enrich the personality hacker folk, and myself included, when we were at the event together. So thank you for helping us get more in touch with our higher selves. You really do understand Jung's texts really well. You understand that he talks about things beyond personality type, and you actually focus a lot on those too. And so Dario Nardi has courses like Jung on Yoga, which show you the side of Jung that promoted the effects of yoga and what it could really do to you and your development in a positive sense. If you want to know all that nuance and richness there, I highly recommend checking out Radiance House, linked below. And yeah, thanks for showing me a look into my cognition and for giving people a look at the neuroscience side of personality. You really offer a unique contribution. And I know that you see this as your karmic obligation or something along the lines of that. Karmic purpose? Or
I mean, we'll stick with obligations. That's okay. It's not a very pleasant word, but it's not always... I mean, to boil it down for people, like I started something and I feel like I have a responsibility to follow through with it. Not like to the very end of it. I'm very happy to hand it off to other people at some point. But, you know, it's like, I think if somebody has a kid, there's sort of like a karmic obligation to raise your kid or to make sure somebody else can do that. It's that kind of thing.
Excellent. Well, it's a pleasure to witness you fulfilling this in your lifetime. Thanks everyone for watching. I hope you were entertained or you learned something new today. I'll see you all in the next episode. Take care. Bye.